you know, Black and Latinx folks, and you know, Amazon has just really shown an indifference to our lives. And
give us a website because we're out of time. Give us the website. Tell us where.
BayAreaAmazonians.org. All the info's there.
And also,
give it again. Go on. All right, we're out of here. All right, thank you. Thank you both. Let's keep talking. That's it for us. We are Smack Against the Claw.
Is KBOO Portland.
Welcome to Art Stop Bus Talk. I'm Nicole, a senior, and I'm here joined with...
Hey, I'm Annie, a sophomore.
I'm Sasha, a junior.
I'm Katie Sullivan, and I'm an art teacher at Reynolds High School.
And I'm Erica Thomas.
And today we are joined with Patricia. Would you like to introduce yourself?
Yeah, my name is Patricia Vasquez. I go by Patty, usually. I like the short version of my name. And I'm an artist and educator living in what I say the unceded lands of the Clackamas, Chinook, and other indigenous peoples, and what we know as Portland. But I'm originally from Tenochtitlan, which is the indigenous name of Mexico City.
Thank you so much for being here. We're really excited. And so, can you tell us a little bit more about yourself growing up and what art kind of meant to you?
Ooh. That's going to take a whole half hour. As I said, I grew up in Mexico City. I grew up in the eastern part. It's a little bit of the periphery of the city and in a pretty working class area. And I sincerely don't know how art came to me. I come from a very large family, like a family of like 100 people, maybe. I have tons of aunts and uncles and cousins. And I'm the only one who has shown any art inclinations. So I'm always kind of puzzled by that. I'm always wondering, how did that happen to me? Because where I grew up, I didn't have access to art at all. There were no cultural centers, there were no art institutions, there were no museums or galleries, of course. And also I never met anybody who called themselves an artist, whether it was in the more institutional way of describing an artist or just because they wanted to be called artists. I never met anybody. So it wasn't until I probably went to college, and I originally did a graphic design degree, and I had drawing classes, and also at the school where I went, we were mixed with art students. That's when I started paying more attention to art, even if I probably started drawing like earlier, probably in middle school. I had a really cool art teacher who really inspired me to draw and do like a lot of things with colors and paints. But I was just doing them because I liked them. I wasn't really thinking about that as art. So I probably didn't started having a notion of what art was until I went to college.
So you mentioned sort of being the only one in your family that kind of became an artist. Can you sort of tell us sort of the reactions and the support or kind of what it was like to have people all around you who didn't share something so special like art?
Well, as I mentioned, I did a graphic design degree, and I did graphic design for a number of years, and gradually I became really disillusioned. I realized that's not what I wanted to do with my life, that I wanted something different, but I really didn't know what exactly. So after I decided I didn't want to do graphic design, I tried different things, but I was already feeling really strongly pulled towards art. Like, starting in college, I had access to museums. I knew that there were a lot of museums in the city, that there was a lot of art things happening. So that's when I started, like, getting more acquainted with it. And I started feeling this really strong pull. And my first initiation was through painting, because I was feeling really drawn to it. And I started just taking classes, random classes, where I knew there were here and there. But without much of an idea of, oh, this is something I want to do with my life. And it wasn't until way late in my life that I decided that I wanted to be an artist. When I had already moved to the U.S., for my family, it has been something that they've just witnessed from very far away. And I feel like till now, my parents probably have a better idea than my brother, but the rest of my family are like, what? What are you doing with your life? Why didn't you get married like everybody else? So it feels pretty strange to understand, like, how do you make a living out of that? Because particularly in this context, in the Mexican context, there are very few people who make a living out of that. And it's hard to explain, because also the kind of art that I do now, it's not the most traditional one. You can say painting to people and they know what you're talking about. Or you can say printmaking, or you can say drawing, or even, you know, performance art or video art. But then when you're doing something different, it's just harder, so it just takes longer to explain. But my parents have always supported me in, like, whatever I want to do. They always made sure I had what I needed, and that if I wanted to school, that was possible. But it wasn't a very active support in, like, guiding me through college or guiding me through a career, but the support has always been there for sure.
You came to school here in the United States. When you first came here, was there some sort of, like, culture shock compared to Mexico and the United States for you?
And it's been so long. It's been like 18 years since I moved to the States, so at this point I have very vague memories. And I moved to Olympia, Washington, from all places. So I moved from Mexico City, which is this huge active city, to like this little town in Washington. I think my probably most vivid memory is that, my reaction to the weather, and also because immediately I got really blue, and I didn't have any tools to shake it off, because I have never lived in a place like that. And as I continued to live in the Pacific Northwest, I feel like I started to realize that things were different. Like, it took me a long time to make friends in school, for example, but I did make friends pretty quick among a group of Latin Americans that were living in Olympia. But then when I went to school, it took me a long time to make friends, and I didn't understand until somebody told me, oh, just take one time. People are not very quick at, like, making bonds. It takes them a long time. And also because I think the hardest part was that I thought that people didn't like me, or that I was doing things that people didn't like or offended them. And then it took me a little bit to realize that people are slower in that way and colder in that way. But I don't feel trauma about it. Yeah, I feel maybe because I immediately made friends among a community of people that came from Latin America like me, and that easied the transition.
Moving towards your work, I believe you did a work with a group of people that worked at this museum, right?
Mm-hmm. Yeah.
You sort of formed this relationship with them. Why do you think art and relationships with people play such a key role in creating something just beautiful and great?
I mean, in general terms, I believe that when you have enough time to spend on an art project, and that allows you to develop relationships, you are able to bring together, I always talk about this diversity of sensibilities, you know, that you're able to bring together a diversity of sensibilities that are reflected in the art, that are not only mine as an artist. And I am pretty excited always to see what kind of connections I can make to people, but I think that in order for those connections to be genuine, you need to spend some time developing relationships. And that's more like in general terms. Mm-hmm. And in like, personally, I enjoy the relationship building part because before I started doing art more seriously, I spent a few years working in the immigrant rights movement. I did a lot of organizing and education. And the organizations I was working with use popular education, which is something I have studied formally, and I have also practiced in the field. And a lot of what you do is just build relationships. That's something that just comes natural to me, and I enjoy it. And I've been able to transfer that into making art projects in a way that it works for me. It works for me really, really well, working in social situations. I hope that made sense.
Yeah. Moving on to one of your art pieces, the Border Crossers one. Mm-hmm. As someone who has an opinion and a voice, how was your experience in sharing it?
As somebody who has an opinion and a voice, and you're talking about me?
Yeah.
Well, I had a lot of experiences. It took me like 7 years to come up with that project. Because, as I was explaining before, I spent a lot of time working in the immigrant rights movement, and I also have a lot of friends who are immigrants and had to cross the desert areas in order to get to Portland or wherever they were intended to go. So I've heard a lot of border crosser stories in my life, but then when I was able to spend time in the Sonoran Desert, I spent like, the first time I went, I spent a week. And all I did was I just followed migrant routes and picked up objects and took video and photos without really knowing what I was going to do with that. But it deeply impressed me. Being there with my body, feeling the heat, feeling the changes in temperature, feeling how it can be really dry and then like a storm can come in. And also like witness the beauty of the landscape, because I think the Sonoran Desert is one of the most beautiful places in Earth. It's magical. It's absolutely beautiful. It shocked me in this really kind of deep way. Like, I started thinking about all the information that I had acquired before in a totally different way. And it kind of haunted me for years. And I kept coming back to the desert, and I kept doing the same things, speaking of objects and doing research. And I really didn't know what I was going to do with that material until, like, maybe a couple of years ago that I realized, you know, I have boxes with stuff in my basement. What am I going to do with that? And I had some time to sit with it, and then the idea of this exhibition took shape. I've always, you know, immigration issues are deep, you know, something that are really close to my heart for a variety of reasons. One of them is that I'm an immigrant. Two is that I have a lot of friends who are immigrants. And three, it's because I have worked in that movement and I've learned how dare, you know, how cruel is the situation for immigrants. I feel like people don't understand like how, like the human rights crisis that it's happening like at many different levels. And one of them is the desert crossings and how many people are living their lives in really cruel ways, are losing their lives in really cruel ways. So I'm always very interested in that topic and in talking about it. And I think Border Crosser was just one of the ways in which I've been dealing with this issue through art.
Can you say a little bit about what that exhibition, I got the opportunity to go look at that exhibition when it was mm-hmm. installed in the PCC Paragon Gallery. it was so moving, and it was really vulnerable and emotional, and it was also like a super interesting visual presentation. So I wonder if you would just say really briefly how it manifested in the gallery.
Yeah, it's kind of a long story that I'm still have a hard time to explain. Something really interesting happened when I was like putting together that exhibition. It was that I started to think as borders in a more expansive way, because I realized, yeah, borders are geographical, are political, you know, are physical, and those are the borders that people are crossing these days countless times, mostly because of economic or political turmoils that are pushing people out of their home places. But I also realized that borders come in many different ways, that they can be psychological and that they can be emotional, they can be social and intangible, and that as a woman and as a queer woman, I was dealing with a lot of trying to cross some borders there that had been placed for me. So in coming to terms with my queerness, I think this idea of borders that are not physical became more salient. And I wanted to put those two things together. So I wanted to talk about border crossers just like we are all border crossers, because my vision was like, I want the exhibition to be an invitation for everybody to assume that they are border crossers. So in the end, the exhibition was an invitation, and I started with the material I had from the Sonoran Desert, because I had a lot of it and I had spent a lot of time going to the Sonoran Desert and doing research. So that's more or less what happened there, I think.
Okay.
You mentioned how you were sort of devastated and sort of realized what crossing the border is really like. And how did you cope with that?
You know, how can I say this? For me, the way to deal with these things is to actually put energy on the issue rather than maybe... And maybe I shouldn't do that. I'm sure there's an emotional like toll. But for me, maybe what's happening to me, it's not that important. What simply is the issue, the Sonoran Desert, you know? So I'm not at risk of La Migra stopping me or of doing a trip where I don't have what I need. So I tend to transfer, you know, that sort of energy towards other places. And maybe I shouldn't do that. Maybe I should pay more attention to myself, but I don't know, that's kind of what I do. Can I ask a question?
Yeah.
Katie, you had mentioned that the students do all kinds of things, dancing and painting and printmaking, and I'm really interested in like listening a little bit of what they do and why. I think the whys are very interesting for me.
I'm just drawn to it naturally. I think growing up, I never really enjoyed drawing. I was never really good at sketching and stuff like that. But then eventually I started high school, and freshman year I started painting, and I was just really drawn to painting because you can put on like just like color and create something just beautiful and amazing. And I think from there I branched out to just other sorts of just art mediums like sewing and printmaking. I actually do a little bit of that, more sort of like in terms of like stamps and stuff, but I like doing that as well. And dancing, I think I just followed the steps of my sister when she did dancing in high school, and I kind of wanted to do that, and I did that, and I really liked it, so I sort of stuck with it. I was just sort of drawn to one thing and then branched out to a lot of other things.
Awesome. What about the others?
Well, when I was younger, I didn't do a lot of painting. It was more when I got into high school, like my freshman year too. I was kind of just put into an art class and didn't really think anything of it until I started painting and I realized like that I really liked it. And so I kind of just stuck with it in high school. I don't do a lot of it outside of school as much as I would like to. It's kind of like a stress reliever, I guess you could say, when I kind of want to let go of like everything else, because I'm just putting it all on the canvas or the paper. But I'm not a dancer, I'm a basketball player. And that's kind of the same for me, like with the painting, like it just helps me kind of let go of anything that is overwhelming or stressing. And it's just also something fun to do.
Awesome.
For me, well, I've been doing dance like not the high school type, but I've been dancing for like since I was really little, just like in quinceañeras and brindis and stuff, like for my siblings and also for like other people in like the neighborhood and the community. And then when I joined the high school dance, it was freshman year, and I just found it like really beautiful. I don't know, I was just really interested in it. It's just like movements, I guess, but it's just like beautiful movements. I just feel very drawn to it, and also painting. It's just very interesting because I might not be very good at painting, but it's like you don't really have to be good, you just have to want to, you know. Things might not look good to other people, but to me, like, I don't know, I just feel very proud of myself sometimes, and I'm like, wow. To really like go away from not reality, but like to pay attention to something else and like to work on it, just like feel proud of yourself. Just motivating.
Yeah, that's a nice feeling. Well, that's awesome. Keep doing it, even if at times you might think that, oh, this is not good, it really doesn't matter. What matters is that you do it.
Every artist on the podcast, I think, has said something like that.
Yeah. Well, it's good to get a reminder of that, because I feel like a lot of people stop doing things when they start to believe that they are not good enough. And that's really sad. Mm-hmm. It's really sad because it really doesn't matter if you're good or not, because it's not like you're doing a test or anything. It's just, you just keep doing it.
We also talked about, as a group, the reluctancy that we can have as individuals to identify as an artist.
Yeah. Yeah, that's been a real struggle for me. And that struggle, it's really tied to gender and class and race issues. When I try to think about what ideas did I have about artists when I was younger, not when I was a kid, but even when I was like 20, in my 20s, I just felt like artists were people from other planets, like mostly like lighter skin and men, because I just really didn't know anybody who looked like me. Or who came from my background who was an artist. So I feel like part of the reason why it took me so long to finally decide, and it was really heart-wrenching to make that decision. I had a lot of fear of assuming that I wanted to be an artist and that I could be an artist. And it had a lot to do with that I just couldn't believe. And it's not my experience. There are studies out there that like show, for example, that once people get out of art school, how many people end up making a living of artists. And it's usually people who come from like higher class backgrounds. In the US, there's like a strong race component. But kids who come from working class backgrounds or who are of color, you know, have a harder time. And it's not only the structural challenges, but it's also the, you know, talking about border crossing, it's like, it's the sort of internalized ideas about what you can and what you cannot do, and the lack of role models. For me, it was a very real struggle for years. I just couldn't make myself. I just paint this painting, and, you know, I like made some videos and I did this and that, but I was never assuming that could be a real thing for me. It was just something that I was doing on the side. You know, I would go to work and then come back and paint the rest of the day. But that was just something I was doing in the privacy of my home, because I couldn't believe that could be public in any way, or that anybody would pay attention or would find that worthy. And I feel like I still struggle with that. You know, those kind of things, especially because we learn them when we're very little, they really never go away. They are lifelong learnings, lifelong, I don't want to say struggles, but just processes. And it's not a bad thing, because actually there's a lot of interesting things that happen once you start paying attention to what you're telling yourself. And when you start paying attention, where is that message coming from? That's not coming from me. I learned that from somewhere else. But yeah, it is real. It's definitely real.
So for someone who is younger and wants to sort of get into art, whether it's traditional or non-traditional, what sort of advice do you have for them, especially if they're not that stereotypical higher class person?
That's hard for me because I am not the best example of somebody who like did that when I was young. But I think in the U.S. there are so many resources and opportunities available. I do think it is important to use them, to find ways to access those resources and those opportunities in the form of scholarships, in the form of classes, in the form of extracurricular activities. There's, like, in Portland, there's tons of organizations who offer arts programming for youth. Of course, now that's not happening, but it will happen again at some point. If I had had access to that when I was young, it would have made things easier for me. I would have developed more confidence. Just take advantage of the place where you are, you know, and I know that sometimes that's not easy, but I feel like there's a lot of people who will be happy to facilitate that for young folks, yeah, in the school and outside the school.
So here is this hypothetical sort of situation. Say you had no limit. You could do whatever you wanted. You had all the resources in the world, all the time in the world. What is a project that you would just love to do?
Oh, wow. I don't tend to think in very grandiose ways. That's something that I'm just like, why would I do? I feel like I'm really interested in like autonomy, like movimientos autónomos, autonomous movements. Yeah, I'm deeply influenced by the Zapatistas here in Mexico, and what they've done and how they do it. So if I had all the resources available, I probably like experiment with something like that, a little bit of an utopic community and self-sustainable and autonomous movement with my friends. Starting with my friends and then expanding it to other people. And maybe that will have elements of art. I am sure it will, but I don't have any strong ideas about how art will play into that. But I believe that those things on themselves are art projects, you know, because people are using all their creative resources to invent something that has never existed, to create something that hasn't existed. So that's art for me.
You seem to be very open about what art is. Do you believe that there's a box that determines this is what art is and this is sort of kind of what art should be?
I think that depends on who you talk to, and I believe that there are people who are very invested in deciding what's art and what's not. Because, of course, you know, like, art is a commodity, too, and it sells. And there is a power, economic power, social, maybe political, too, that comes with saying what's art and what's not, because you can benefit hugely from that. So if you talk to people who believe in that system, you know, they will have strong ideas that, you know, art should be defined in this or that way, that it should be a painting that looks like this or that makes this reference to this other thing or whatever they want to say. You know, personally, I feel like, yeah, I'm probably on board with the idea that anything can be art, you know, that that art shouldn't have a specific boundary that it's limited by. Because also I believe that once you put a boundary to what art is and what it's not, then stop being art. Then it's not anymore, because art is about asking questions and creating new ways of doing things and expanding our knowledge, and that doesn't happen within limits. And, but of course, you know, I also know that I have strong ideas about what's good and what's bad art. but that's kind of a different conversation. Anything can be art, but also it can be bad art. That doesn't mean that it's gonna be good, right? Yeah.
Pati, you mentioned the Zapatistas a minute ago. I'm not sure if the students are familiar or not with the Zapatistas.
Yeah, you should check them out. They're incredible. Zapatistas is an autonomous movement that was created in Chiapas. And it's mostly indigenous people from Chiapas who rebelled against the Mexican government, first through armed mediums. There was a little bit of a battle happening in Chiapas for a few days, but then they left their arms and they just became a political movement that's really based on some communities in the mountains of Chiapas that are autonomous, that disengaged from the Mexican government. They're like, we don't want anything to do with you. We've never gotten anything good out of you. So we're going to do our own thing. And it's very, very inspiring. I've been there a few times, and it's just incredible what they've been able to do. In terms of the political consciousness that they have, it's so advanced and so open, more than anything I've been close to. And also because they've created their own literature and their own art. They've really invested in this imaginary. It's very inspiring, and it has a very strong poetic element, I think, the Zapatista movement. I am a big admirer, and I go there whenever I can. You should check them out.
Do the students have any closing questions?
Anything up and coming? Like any project?
I got a grant to continue doing my work with the Mayan community in Portland. Mm-hmm. And one thing that I'm really excited about is that there's this rapper, Pad Boy is his name, and he raps in Mayan, and it's incredible. And I really want to bring him to Portland. So part of the grant is going to go toward bringing him to Portland next summer and to do some work with you. Well, I'm really, really excited about that part because I just think it's incredible what he does. You should check him out, Pat Boy, P-A-T, and then Boy.
So be sure to follow us on Instagram at Reynolds Art Show. Thank you guys for listening. Thank you, Patricia, for being here today. And be sure to listen on SoundCloud and KVOO.
Thank you. Thanks for having me. This was awesome.
If you want to go check out more of Patricia's work, you can go to cargocollective.com/patriciavq.
Thanks so much for coming. We really appreciate it.
Thank you.
You're listening to KVOO.